Hey, Western Wisconsin, let's see what we're up to. Time again on a Thursday morning for Spectrum West. You might be listening on a Friday evening, too, so I don't want to throw you off. Welcome to a special edition. Well, you know, they're all special editions, and we have some gangbuster guests lined up in coming weeks. Ooh, doggy. That's my impersonation of Jed Clampett. That's all I do. I'm Al Ross, and today he takes on the work of Walt Whitman. Not an easy task, helping each audience understand and appreciate some of the works of who some folks call the American Shakespeare and the father of free verse. Terry Mesch is here. He'll be in Durand, Wisconsin next Saturday evening. A quartet of UW-Eau Claire music students travel to South Africa this summer to play their instruments, some of which aren't instruments, but they make them such. In a well-known international chamber musical festival, two of the young men, Joe Huget and Elliot Rittenberry, are here today. Jim Oliver discussed the festival theater production of The 39 Steps with director Carl Lindberg and cast member Jacqueline Johnson, who is also the festival's artistic director. Jim will also provide a compendium of what's on stage in Western Wisconsin. Let's commence today with the news that Friday and Saturday, Ashley for the Arts returns. Ashley for the Arts is a music and arts festival, is still comparatively new, but each year it grows by leaps and bounds. They have the room in the spacious and lovely Memorial Park in Arcadia, Wisconsin. People are committed to making it the best it can be. And it's now dubbed as one of the country's fastest-growing music and arts occasions. All of which you will learn from my conversation with Jason Lockington. He's the corporate event organizer for Ashley, who oversees this annual spectacular. And here is our dialogue. Well, you know, Jason, the stage acts, I mean, they seem to be getting bigger and bigger each year. I mean, headliners this year include the Beach Boys on Friday and Ingrid Michaelson on Saturday. I'm kind of curious, what does it take to sign a global classic like the Beach Boys and a star like Ingrid?
Well, you know, we do a little research, believe it or not. We try to find music that won't turn off the majority of the people that come, including, you know, no matter, regardless of what age group you're at. So I would say that, you know, that's number one. And the Beach Boys, of course, transcends multiple genres of music and multiple generations. So it's a can't miss, in our opinion. And based on the phone calls we're getting, the Beach Boys, it's just attendance is going to be wonderful. And
yeah,
so we're really excited about them. Of course, Ingrid, her music is the same way. I think a lot of the older generation probably isn't familiar with her music, but when they hear her, I think they're going to love her.
Her current tour reads like this: New York, Indianapolis, Louisville, Portland, Cleveland, Kansas City, Arcadia. I mean, that's good stuff.
Yeah, you know, we have a bachelorette party coming from Chicago to see Ingrid. You know, you get a few calls like that. We have another one. This daughter's, her mother was trying to find a concert for Ingrid, and she's in Oshkosh, and this was the one that they could make, the closest one that they had an option for. So, yeah, we're getting a lot of interest in Ingrid Michaelson as well, and of course she came out with a new album, and it's just been doing great. So our timing was perfect for
her. No kidding. Yeah, way to go. There's lots of other stuff in the amphitheater. How many does that seat?
Amphitheater accommodates between 5,000 and 6,000.
There's grass seats too.
There's grass. We're expecting, you know, that a lot of folks that come probably will not see the stage. So we're actually ordering a couple large monitors, video walls, jumbotrons, whatever you want to call them. And and we're encouraging people to bring chairs, but we'll be selling them as well, and blankets. And of course, there's a lot more than that. The sky lanterns over above and the you know, the hot air balloons, and it's not just the music, just seeing the Beach Boys. It's also just the whole charity event.
You betcha. And let's go back to the music for just a second, because the groups who perform in the pavilion are no slouch either, including, by the way, the Big River Radio Wave. Proud to promote that. That's Saturday at 11:30. This is several years now that we've been there. And by the way, the Big River Radio Wave show that is performed at the Ashley for the Arts Festival Saturday morning will be replayed on Wisconsin Public Radio on Labor Day. And as you alluded, there are many, many other amenities, great food, great art, cars, balloons, kids, stuff. Talk about where the money goes, Jason.
Yeah, there's several different organizations that benefit from this, including on Friday, it's really dedicated to the American Cancer Society, and there's three different organizations, local organizations, that help folks or families who have someone who's been diagnosed with cancer and is having a hard time, you know, with the financial aspect of it to pay for the medical expenses of their treatment. So we're working with two local churches as well as an organization called the Rita Tranberg Memorial, along with American Cancer Society on Friday. And then we have, throughout the event, there's Ashley's Angels, which is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization that helps a dozen schools just in Wisconsin, children and their families who are having problems just having a nice pair of shoes or a coat for the winters. So there's several different organizations as well that have to do more with the children's charities, but that's definitely our flagship.
Uh-huh. What annual is this?
This is number six.
Number six already. Wow.
But, you know, it really didn't get going until we had the Big River radio wave.
Yeah, that was the catapult to it. That just took it into the stratosphere, I'm sure.
No question. And, you know, we really did, in all honesty, we used you a little bit. People look forward to coming to that program every year. You're really entertaining, obviously, but the music is just exceptional, too, with the Riverbenders. And it's one of the favorites, and we look forward to having you come back every year. I hope you do.
It's a lot of fun, and thank you for that. Ron Wanick and the Wanick family are deeply committed to returning the favor of their success. We talked with Ron during the wave, and he eloquently, in his own straightforward kind of style, addressed the audience about his personal dedication to all the people who have helped make Ashley successful. And his desire that everyone enjoy the fruits of their labor. Talk about the day, if you can. Everybody got together and said, you know, hey, we have to have a festival.
Well, it was 1989.
Oh, really?
That was when the actual park was created.
Okay, okay.
But 1989 was when the mayor of Arcadia at that time had come to Ron Wanick to say, you know, we have this acreage. It's about 54 acres, Ron. What do we do with this land? And he recommended that because there was a lot of folks involved in the military at the time that they create this park called Memorial Park. But it was about a 25-year passion of his designing this park and developing this park and, of course, funding the development of it.
Sure.
And on the end of Soldier's Walk is this amphitheater. And about 6 years ago, that's when some folks from the community said, hey, you know, we got to throw a concert. And it was called the Main Street Committee. And they had some funds, and they asked Ashley to sort of buy some tickets, which they did.
Mm-hmm.
And then the committee ran out of money. So the next year, they're like, hey, would you mind taking this? And Todd Wanick, our president and CEO, and Ron Wanick, our chairman, said, sure, we'll do it. They wanted to call it Ashley for the Arts. And that's really where it all started, was 6 years ago. Todd Fetch was one of the people. He's a local celebrity here in Arcadia, and he really got the ball started, but it was Todd and Ron who sort of transcended this into something more than just music. They wanted it to become a charity event.
Well, Spectrum West is all about the arts. It's what we are, so we like hanging out with you. Ashley for the Arts is one of America's fastest-growing festivals, evidenced by who you're able to corral for entertainment, and the crowds also that show up prove what it is you have to offer. Thanks, Jason, and three cheers for the work you put into this. I know that you're kind of a tireless guy as well.
Well, I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me on the program, Al.
Ashley for the Arts, the colorful brochure says, showcasing the arts, supporting humanity. I personally look forward to seeing many of you Saturday at 11:30 a.m. for the performance and the taping of the Big River Radio Wave in the Pavilion. Comedian Tommy Ryman will be there, young, vibrant musician Eric Sampson, Kenny Solway, The Last River Rat, The Riverbenders, and a cast of tens. Drop by if you can. Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to be here, and thanks for being here. This week, Jim Oliver's theatrical conversation is a trialogue, and it takes us to the friendly and entertaining surroundings of the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls.
The 39 Steps is a melodrama adapted from a 1915 novel by John Buchan and a 1935 film by Alfred Hitchcock. The show opens Saturday at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls and will continue in repertory until September 7th. Joining us to talk about the 39 Steps is the director, Carl Lindberg, and artistic director at the festival, Jacqueline Johnson. Welcome both of you to Spectrum West.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
Well, Carl, the 1935 Hitchcock film is called a thriller. But the play is called a melodrama. That tends to indicate something a bit more humorous. So tell us about that.
The play is based on the movie, which is absolutely a thriller, a very enjoyable Hitchcock thriller. I'm sure many people have seen it. And the play is an adaptation of the movie, most directly, also the book, and takes all of the varied and several characters from the movie and has them played by four total actors. So I think that gives everyone a pretty clear initial indication where the comedy comes from. We see several quick changes, men playing women, women playing men, the whole nine, and fast changes, exciting train chases and plane chases and explosions and interrogations and gunmen, a super spy. We get all of these things, and we get them all from primarily three actors. The fourth actor, who plays Richard Hannay, the protagonist, doesn't play any other characters. So the comedy absolutely comes from the situations that we have wittingly thrown ourselves into as actors and artists and directors and designers. We have chosen to take what is impossible and make it creatively possible.
This is a dumb question, but I just have to ask it. Is the audience expected to boo and hiss during the show?
If they do, we will welcome it, absolutely. Okay. I don't know that that expectation is being put into place in any certain way, but there are canned applauses and canned laughters throughout the show. Some simple interaction that could potentially happen between actors and audience, and if we are able as actors or artists to encourage audience participation, and if people can't help but get up out of their seats or vocally react, if they have that impulse, that's exciting, and we're always welcome to that with this style of play.
Well, Jackie, tell us how this play was selected.
Well, The 39 Steps is kind of a popular title right now amongst theaters in general across the United States. Part of it is for the exact reasons that Carl just mentioned. It's kind of a theater person's dream to take on one of these challenges. And, you know, that and coupled with the idea that we always want to offer a little bit of variety to our audiences, we knew that we wanted something that was hopefully a comedy, but also, you know, had elements of mystery or adventure. And The 39 Steps has all of that. We also we're looking for a way to challenge a couple of our actors that we have here in the company, and this is one of the most challenging feats that I've ever taken on and that some of our other teammates have. So it's been a lot of fun to watch them use their creativity and their juices, let it flow, and come up with these amazing solutions to these dramatic problems.
Well, Carl, I can't really ask you who the main characters are because there's so many of them, but who are the primary actors in the show?
Stephen Pierce plays Richard Hannay, the protagonist in the book and the film. His pencil mustache will be very recognizable for anyone who has seen the film. Jacqueline Johnson here, who's with us, plays the romantic opposites to Richard Hannay, so she plays all of his love interests throughout the story. And then Seth Kaltwasser and Andrew Benson play the two clowns. Those two gentlemen play every other character that we could possibly imagine throughout the entirety of the play.
Give us kind of a hint as to what the storyline actually is here.
Absolutely. We open in Hannay's flat. He is a little down and out, bored, and looking for some adventure. Obviously, when looking for adventure, all of us, of course, first think of going to the theater. And Richard Hannay does, where he unknowingly is in the wrong place at the right time and encounters Annabella Schmidt, a super spy, who, in need of an escape, ends up at Hannay's flat. She ends up dead.
Ooh.
So Mr. Hannay does everything he can to try to help Annabella and her effort to save this super plot. There's a super secret weapon that could be getting out of the country. And so Hannay is inspired to take over her mission, and he's not much of a spy, so there's some where the comedy comes from there, too.
Uh-huh. Well, we're talking to Carl Lindbergh, who is director of the St. Croix Festival Theater production of The 39 Steps, and Jacqueline Johnson, who is the artistic director at the festival and a member of the cast. Jackie, you are involved in all of this quick change and different characters stuff. What kind of a challenge is that for an actor?
Well, you know, it is technically quite a feat. We're lucky that we have three wonderful stagehands to help us maneuver all of those crazy changes and the do quick dressing and things like that. As an actor, it's always an exciting challenge to be able to create three very different characters and have very specific stories for each of them and to take the audience along for the ride and that journey. I always like to be able to kind of change the hats around. It's one of the reasons why I do what I do at Festival Theater. So I always love the challenge. And, of course, I hope I am able to turn out some very specific differences. All three of these ladies, I'm lucky, have very different stories and different backgrounds. And so, luckily, the playwright and kind of the development of these stories have given me a lot to work from.
Well, Carl, I'm going to ask a little bit about your background. You teach theater at the Chicago Academy for the Arts, which is a high school level program. Is that right?
Correct.
And then the College of DuPage. You also freelance in theater around the country, obviously. Tell us how a typical year works for you.
Every year is a little bit different. Things are stabilizing somewhat due to teaching assignments. I live in Chicago proper, and the Chicago Academy for the Arts is Chicago's only private performing arts high school, and so I teach acting and voice for the actor there. I also teach as an adjunct professor at the College of DuPage. Both of those jobs fell into my lap, as most work in this business does. As with all businesses, networking is very crucial. A typical year can vary pretty dramatically. I teach a few classes a week. I audition anywhere from 3 to maybe 15 times a week. I am hoping to continually be working on some sort of project while continually working for the next. So it's a never-ending cycle. Living the dream is, you know, a phrase we use a lot, and It's got some connotations depending on which day of the week it is. It can mean several different things. That's the short version of what could be a very long answer as to what my typical year could be.
Okay. Well, that was kind of an unfair question, I think, because I sort of expect that you really don't have a typical year, do you?
Correct.
You've been in a number of shows at the Festival Theater. What keeps you coming back to Western Wisconsin?
It's a great question. The people, I think, is the first thing for me. I remember in 2010, I went to an audition. I'm sitting in the hallway after the audition, and Danette Olson comes up to me and says, "I see you have an MFA in directing. Based on the 90 seconds of audition material I just saw and the brief conversation we just had, have you ever heard of a play called Is He Dead?" I said, "Nope." And she said, "Well, you should read it, and I'm interested to see what your schedule might be and have some further discussions about potentially directing." And I read it. I'm not sure if you saw Is He Dead, but it's one of my favorite projects that I've worked on to this day. And because of the people, and I don't just mean the people at the theater who are fantastic, I mean the people of the community who are fantastic and supportive in a way that is inexplicable, the amount of time and effort and love and the character of the people working at the theater is fantastic. The opportunities are fantastic. We get to work on challenging material. The 39 Steps is very challenging in a lot of ways. The opportunity to have performed in The Mystery of Irma Vep will always be something I'll consider a highlight. And so for me, there's no downfall. It's all good. I'm always looking forward to being up here.
Well, Jackie, I'm going to ask you to put your artistic director's hat on for a minute. What's coming up next at the Festival Theater?
We've got our repertory season in full swing. We unfortunately just closed one of our shows, The Frogs, but we still have one more production of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. That takes place on August 16th. We also have a few more shows left of Almost Maine, which is in our downstairs space, and that show closes on August 17th, and it is limited seating, so we have been selling that out quite regularly. So if anybody's interested in seeing that, I would make sure that they get their reservations in soon. And then after that, once we've got the 39 Steps on its feet, we are in full swing for rehearsals for The Miser, which opens on October 2nd and runs through October 26th. It's a wonderful comedy, fast-paced French farce, It's going to be a delight. And actually, some of the actors that you'll see in 39 Steps will also be in that show. So we're pretty excited about that. And then our holiday show is Hans Brinker or the Silver Skates. And amidst all that going on, we have a number of really amazing concerts happening and special events. Mary Mack is coming this fall and at the end of September. She's a very talented comedian we're excited about. Lynn Rothrock returns, Alice Peacock, Wyatt Orfield Band. It's just a lot. Interested parties should check us out online, www.festivaltheater.org, and they can find the full schedule there.
Okay. Well, we've been visiting with Carl Lindbergh, who is director of the St. Croix Festival Theater production of The 39 Steps, and with Jacqueline Johnson, who is the artistic director and a member of the cast. The show opens Saturday and continues in repertory through September 7th. For ticket information, you can use your favorite internet search engine to find the Festival Theater. Well, Carl and Jackie, it's been a great pleasure to talk to you today. Thanks
so much. Glad to be here.
Support for WPR comes from Herbster Studio Art Tour along the south shore of Lake Superior, featuring home studios showcasing artistic talent and artwork silent auction, August 16th and 17th, open to the public. More at herbsterstudioarttour.com. Support also comes from Visit Winona, home of the Minnesota Marine Art Museum, with special collections including Picasso, Matisse, Van Gogh, Monet, Renoir, O'Keeffe, Sargent, and Homer. It's the year to discover Winona. Visit winona.com. Support also comes from Ken Vance Honda, featuring the 2014 Civic with 7 models to choose from, including the HF, hybrid, and natural gas-powered options. More at kenvance.com.
Thank you, ma'am. Here's a Spectrum memo for you. Saturday night, it's the Found Footage Festival at the Downtown Cinema Theater in Eau Claire. 9:15 is when it starts, and it's the 10th anniversary. Go to foundfootagefest.com for more information. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Thanks so much for being with us today. Imagine you're a college student. It's the dead of winter. Things might be feeling a bit tedious and boilerplated. And then one of your mentors just sort of mentions something in passing.
Something big is going to happen. Like, something really big. I can't even tell you right now, but if this goes through, like, it's going to be insane.
Well, that'll perk you up, melt your surroundings, and cause a little anticipation.
So a couple days later, he texts me, "It's a go. Whatever I'm going to tell you, I need to talk to you about it today." So I ate lunch really fast, met with him in a room, and he told me, "Elliot, we've been invited to go to South Africa to go perform at an international chamber music festival, and you're one of the people I want to bring," Joe being another one, and two others that were invited as well. And from there, just seemed so surreal, the whole idea of it. It was so fresh at that point.
That's Elliot, as in Elliot Rittenberry. The Joe he mentioned is Joe Huget, and they, along with Andrew Booker and Jack Donovan, formed a percussion quartet to fulfill that dream performance. You're listening to him in the background, the actual performance. The beginning of it, anyway. They jump on a whole bunch of other instruments later on. Joe and Elliot join me in the studio to tell us about the surprise, the work that went into it, and how it all went down earlier this summer. Joe picks up the story.
There was a lot of planning that went into it. It wasn't until probably April or May when we were actually getting our pieces ready to perform and performing them where it kind of actually started to sink in, where when we first found out about it, it was so unknown. We didn't know what it was going to be like, what music we were going to play. The more we started working and the more we started playing music together, it kind of started to sink in that we were going to be a part of this really, really cool experience.
Yeah, this is one of those perks, you know, that come along in education that a lot of young people don't ever get. But UW-Eau Claire's music department tosses this out to people.
In the music department, certain groups take really cool trips every 2 or 3 times a year. I mean, when you really think about each group.
Mm-hmm. The choirs are going. Like, there's at least a choir trip every year.
Women's choir went to Ireland this year. My freshman year, I went on a Mediterranean cruise with the marching band. There's a lot of really cool trips for large ensembles. This was kind of the first one for a small.
And that's what I mean by how wonderful the UW-Eau Claire music experience is, because a lot of young people go through their entire college experience just singing in the gym.
Yeah.
That's the extent of their performances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was going to be my biggest regret finishing up with school, that I didn't get to travel internationally at all, because I had just put a lot of time into my schoolwork and had been working on all of that stuff. And actually, before I had gotten invited to perform in South Africa, I was auditioning for drum and bugle corps at the time because it was my last year of eligibility to do it. Mm-hmm. And I was just about to go and audition for a group down in Florida that weekend before, like 2 days before that, I was told about the whole experience. And I had a lot of thinking to do because I was thinking this is my chance to really get out and travel internationally because mm-hmm. of all the different people I've seen do it and how much of a cool cultural immersion it is. So getting to do the music and be immersed in a different culture is just such an amazing thing that I love that the university really supports it.
So you guys are sitting here post-trip. Are you different guys than you were pre-trip? How did this add to your life's perspective, Joe?
Well, the area we were down in South Africa was a college town. It was, you know, not really what you think about when you think of Africa right away.
Sure.
But getting to meet some of the students down there in Stellenbosch, that also students from, you know, we had met a lot of people from Johannesburg and from other countries in Africa, as well as a few from Europe. Getting about 12 days to get to know people and get to know them personally and get to play music with them every day was something that any musician or really any person should experience. I think it really helped us grow personally. I mean, just getting to know these people on a daily basis, having never met them before, and probably a lot of them we'll never see again, but hopefully we'll see a handful of them. I just think it was a big, you know, personal experience for all of us.
Now, you were playing with students from around the world. Did you find that the Blue Golds can hold their own with anybody? What's the state of the art in music worldwide?
I mean, it's different over there in South Africa, especially because one thing that we found was really unique is that music is not always offered into all public schools like it is here. I mean, we always talk about how music arts programs are being cut in the United States, but we actually have it pretty lucky because we met a few people who were like, well, this is my first time ever playing in an ensemble at all, past just like taking lessons and playing on my own. And some of these people were like, in like 23, 24, and this was their first time for them.
I think it varies a lot country to country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But South Africa, I think it varied a lot school to school because we had met some people. One of the good friends we made from the percussion studio down there was basically begging our percussion instructor to send any, you know, used drum heads or used equipment that he would have just thrown out to see if he can get that to her school down in Johannesburg because they didn't have any equipment to play and anyone who was interested in playing percussion, they didn't have any instruments to play. But there are also plenty of schools down there where people had come from who are great musicians and had played in a group a lot. So it really goes school to school down there in South Africa.
Joe Huget and Elliot Rittenberry are with us in the studio. They're 50% of a percussion quartet that performed at the Stellenbosch International Chamber Music Festival in a town of the same name in South Africa. Now, as you alluded, you weren't even a quartet before the news came. You put a quartet together.
Yeah, we had played a lot together, myself, Joe, and then Andrew and Jack, who aren't here today. Mm-hmm. We've all played in ensembles before. We've played in percussion ensemble a little bit, but, I mean, we've never had something like this where we really just worked music together by ourselves. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it was us running rehearsals on our own and really trying to discover how to make the pieces better, how to dig into it. And we all knew that it had to be the best performance that we have ever put on because we are representing the university, our country, and we just really had to go all the way that we possibly could.
It was great getting to play these pieces with the four of us. I mean, me and Andrew going into our senior year, Elliot and Jack going into their fifth year, we've had plenty of time to play music together, but not in a quartet, like Elliot was saying. And I think we had known each other for so long and had played with each other for so long that all our rehearsals and getting all this music together just gelled so well. And it was just super fun to meet with these guys every day and just work on learning these tunes.
Did you guys just call yourselves the UW Eau Claire Percussion Quartet, or did you come up with a cool name that was going to make people talk?
We didn't really come up with a name.
Just a UW Eau Claire South Africa Quartet, I guess is what we call.
You must have sat around and talked, hey, let's come up with a quartet. No?
Should have.
We should have. But the South Africa Quartet, I guess, was enough to be, make people yeah. raise their eyebrow. So
SAQ.
SAQ.
That's cool.
SAC.
I like that. So tell people about what a percussion quartet consists of and what kind of stuff do you play? Percussion includes what? Marimbas and drums. We
yeah.
all know
keyboard
that.
Instruments.
And keyboard instruments. Oh, keyboards.
Of,
okay.
All sorts of things. That's a great thing.
Triangle?
About, yeah. It's oh, yeah. a great thing about it's a great thing about percussion is pretty much anything you hit.
You play on boards, I read.
The thing I loved about our repertoire is that we had a large array of different instruments included. Mm-hmm. We had a few pieces where it was featuring the marimba, which is kind of like a larger xylophone.
Sure.
And there are some times where three of us would play on one.
There's, I was going to ask you about that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's one piece where three of us were on one marimba and playing on different parts of the instrument. Like Joe played on the side of the marimba, not even on the keys. Then Jack would like go in front and play on like the metal resonators to add like a different texture. So that piece was really interesting and just itself activated a lot of different types of percussion styles on one instrument. And then we would have pieces where there was a lot of different multiple pieces of percussion. One piece that Joe, Andrew, and I did had, we all had a woodblock, we all had a conga or a bongo, and we all had a piece of metal, whether that was like a brake drum, which was literally off of a car, or a cowbell. And we had cymbals and all sorts of that kind of stuff. And then the really extreme piece, Joe could tell you more about.
Yeah, it was called Table Music, which me and Jack and Andrew, the notation was probably the most unique thing about this. It was played on a board with our bare hands, and the music consisted of a bunch of just shapes and symbols and, you know, squiggly lines, and there was a key that we had.
It was all handwritten, too.
It was all handwritten, so it was kind of sloppy looking, to be honest, but we all could figure it out all right. You know, for instance, like, if it was a star, you would hit your knuckles on the board, and if it was a triangle, it was you would hit your palm on the table, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So the learning curve for that one was the biggest thing, because once we figured out what these shapes meant and we could actually read the music and play it, it got a lot easier. And that was a piece where I think the payoff was tremendous.
The two guys in the studio with us went to South Africa as part of a UW Eau Claire percussion quartet. I have to guess that there's some place we can watch a video of what you did.
There is, on YouTube.
Because we want to.
I think it's under UWEC. It should say SICMF for Stellenbosch International Chamber Music Festival.
Okay.
Yeah, our percussion professor put a video of the whole entire concert. It's about a 50-minute concert, and there's five pieces throughout.
That's your concert?
Yep.
So every group had its own?
There are about five groups that were invited to perform at the festival. There were also just a ton of students who just went to the festival, about 260 people were there all together. And we were one of the five or so groups that gave on a concert during the lunch hour, just during the day.
Cool.
And then every evening there were faculty or, in our case, like large student ensemble concerts, like the orchestras that we would be rehearsing for a majority of the time.
So you had one concert as a quartet?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you played with other larger groups.
Yeah.
Yeah, then things got pretty busy for us. Our performance was July 5th and
when did you get there?
The festival was the 4th through the 13th.
So you got it done early.
Yeah, we got it done early on.
A lot of weight was off your shoulders and you just had a good time after that.
We weren't too sure after that concert if we were going to be doing a whole lot else or what. We actually were kept pretty busy with rehearsals and going to different concerts and different classes and things along those lines, but it was never stressful. It was all fun stuff.
You guys are also to be congratulated because right now, Elliot, you're already tutoring young people in Menominee and Chippewa Falls. Great practice for becoming a band director someday.
Yeah, that's another great thing that I've really enjoyed about being a music student at UW-Eau Claire is there's a lot of really strong and continually developing music programs in the area. The past few years have been really focused on teaching the drum lines over at Chippewa Falls and the indoor drum line over in Menominee. Uh-huh. And that's just been an amazing experience.
That is a great experience. I'm sure they appreciated it. Joe, you've been a member also of several musical aggregations at UW-Eau Claire. You help out with the Chippewa Valley Youth Symphony, I read. And I didn't know there was such a thing as the Percussive Arts Society.
You're an officer in that. What are meetings for those like? I mean, you get together and you play on whatever's available? You play each other's heads or ears?
Well, we kind of talk about like the state of, you know, our percussion studio here and our chapter of the society here. Usually it's debating what to spend our money on what little money there is.
Is there a secret handshake for the Percussive Arts Society?
We'll work on one.
You should have one.
Yeah.
That includes something that makes noise.
Yeah.
That should be kind of fun. Well, nice going, you guys. You appear to be great ambassadors, and thanks for representing Eau Claire and UW-Eau Claire in Wisconsin so nobly. And I'm happy for you that you had such a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
It was an honor. It really was to be down there being the only, well, besides a couple brass players from New York, we were the only ones down there from the United States.
Oh, cool.
So on a broader scale, we were representing the country and, you know, on top of representing the state and the university.
As you were saying earlier, it was really cool to see us be able to kind of hang with everyone over there musically and be taken really well with the reception to our concert and everything and just performing.
Well, thanks for coming in, and all the best in careers that I predict are going to be wonderful.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
It's a little of that table music going on in the background there that Joe was talking about, and that is directly from the YouTube video that you can go watch. And I suggest you do it because it is fascinating.
Support for WPR comes from Chilson Subaru in Eau Claire, offering fuel-efficient all-wheel drive vehicles, including the all-new Outback, designed to provide maximum safety and a comfortable interior. More at ChilsonSubaru.com. Support also comes from Mile of Music, an artisan music festival in downtown Appleton, August 7th through 10th, welcoming 200 performers from around the country at 60 venues. Mile of Music is supported by the Wisconsin Department of Tourism. MileofMusic.com.
Yes, sir. And thank you, guys. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Another of the many gratuities that come with doing this program is how often I'm reminded of things I learned years ago, things that have dropped behind the bookshelf and collected dust. Guests remind me to look again, to remind myself why they were revealed to me in the first place. Walt Whitman is one, and I'm happy to say he's back. Thanks to Terry Mesh, who single-handedly takes on the Whitman persona and helps us understand this complex poet and writer of things universal. Mesh, and thus Whitman, are coming next Saturday, the 16th, to the Old Courthouse Museum. That's in Durand. He's been dubbed the Poet of Democracy and America's Shakespeare and the Father of Free Verse. Now, that's deep stuff. Yet some of his stuff isn't so deep, is it?
No, he's actually a very plain-thinking man. Yeah. But his selection of words and his arrangement of his sentences, his phrasing, make him difficult to interpret sometimes. It's sort of like the Bible, let's say the King James Version, the majestic prose, and if you don't put the noun or pronounce it the correct way or the verb in the right spot, it's difficult to understand. So he's a challenge at times, but he's a very plain-spoken man. Once I reach the understanding that I have of what he is saying, he's easy to interpret.
Do you think in just regular conversation he would have been a guy that didn't beat around the bush?
I think he was a brave man in that sense, courageous in his outspokenness. In fact, that probably attributes to the fact that he was not financially successful or literarily successful during his own lifetime. He didn't die a pauper necessarily, he was not a rich man, much like Emerson or some of the other great writers of that era.
What do you think he wanted us to get from his poetry, or do you think he just wanted us to have fun and enjoy the walk or the run?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I don't know, other than he was a seeker of the truth, and he, I think, also recognized that the society around him generally did not perceive the truth the same way. And I think in his verse he was trying to spread the truth as he knew it.
This came to me while I was reading some of his stuff and knowing that you are an interpreter. In all of your work with his work, were there any, as they like to call them nowadays, aha moments when you said, oh, why didn't I catch that before? Is there a secret to understanding his stuff?
I still, after going through the selection of poems that I read or interpret, occasionally I'm still baffled occasionally by a line. Now, what did he mean? And then all of a sudden I'll go, oh, that's how that's supposed to be said, you know. And then it's just a matter of inflecting my voice differently on a key word tells what his meaning was. And that's when I really feel I'm channeling Whitman, that he's speaking through me. It's sort of a vain observation about myself, but there are times when I hear Whitman's voice coming through me. It's kind of those shivery moments you get when you, oh, that's it. I'm sure musicians must feel that, singers must feel that when they know that they've got it right. All five or six musicians are playing it right, and it's just perfect. They get a shiver of, wow, this is great. I feel Whitman sometimes.
Well, you know, his stuff, especially Leaves of Grass, is widely considered a masterpiece. And so you would think if he is a master that he injected some of that. Maybe it's supposed to be a little bit of a maze for you.
Oh, I agree with that. In fact, Emerson was one of his greatest fans, probably because Emerson understood literature and what Walt was trying to do with his work. In my search of Leaves of Grass, which words am I going to select? It was those, first of all, that struck me as, wow, this is one of those aha moments. Yes, this is a good one. But then after I kind of went through and selected, I had to back away and say, which of these is going to appeal to the listener when I'm interpreting?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And again, not all of them are accessible, readily accessible to the ordinary listener.
Yeah, I mean, there is a difference between reading poetry and hearing it out loud. I've talked with poets about that. Poetry, I think, is meant to be read out loud.
You must have had Sister Benedicta for third grade, just like I did, because that was what we were instructed in grade school, is poetry is meant to be read out loud, much like a song. In fact, Whitman calls himself a singer. I sing the body electric. Oneself I sing. So he calls his poems songs. And for me, in my experience with music, each word has a particular note that it's sung to, and you sing it in a progression of sounds, and hopefully you're interpreting it so that people understand it. Poetry, in my estimation, is written the same way. Each word has to have the same sound each time, and it has to be placed properly into the sentence or into the thought to have it understood well. So, yes, it's singing. I enjoy that part of it.
Fascinating. In the studio with us, Terry Mesh. He presents Sing Me the Universal, a Whitman monologue. It's coming to the Old Courthouse Museum in Durand on Saturday, the 16th of August at 7:30 p.m. Are you a poet, or you just like poetry?
I look to others for the words. The biblical analogy that I use is there is the person who speaks in tongue is blessed by God, but the one who is the interpreter of those tongues so the rest of us can understand is the one that is truly blessed.
Interesting that you would talk about religion in that sense, because Whitman was a humanist.
Humanist. I wouldn't stretch to atheist, but his concept of theology, well, it certainly wasn't theology. When he speaks of God, he speaks of a lover, divine and perfect comrade, sitting content, waiting for me. Be thou my God. He talks about the race's aspirations, all great poets, all those things. He speaks of, I see God in every hour of the day and every moment then. So he sees God in everything. And the concept of God, God is everywhere. Mm-hmm. Whitman saw God in everything. A writing course that I was taking was called Spiritual Writing. We were to write something that we wanted to get rid of in our lives. I finally, in spirituality, I'm already there. You don't get any closer than where you are. I'm here now. I'm not necessarily giving up the search, but the search isn't so important now. It's the experience. Mm-hmm. I'm convinced that Whitman was there. He probably was more, let's say, outspoken or demonstrated it more readily when he was younger. As an older gentleman, he probably backed away from some of it. He had a lot of rejection for his work during his lifetime. His discussion of sexuality, we're not sure as to what his preference was, but there are certainly opinions that he was at least bisexual, if not homosexual, gay. His expression of that when he was young, probably at least in a group of other like-minded or preference people, he was very outgoing and very demonstrative. But within, well, he had to find a job. He had to have a job to have his work accepted. The general public thought he was a purveyor of pornography because he wrote about the experience of man with man, you know, as opposed to man.
He was way ahead of his time when it came to sexuality. In this day and age, there are some people who would probably perceive him as an icon.
And particularly given the time that he lived, the Victorian era, when anything like that was, it was known, but it was not talked about.
Yeah. Did he also see a lot of scrutiny by literary folks who had not seen free verse before? They went, what are you talking about, Walt?
Well, he did not write in meter and rhyme, and that was... At that time, of course, the best poetry was written in meter and rhyme. I mean, when you talked about poetry written in English, that's what it was. He saw it something different, and he felt it something different. And he, in that sense, very courageous to produce what I consider real poetry, a song that I sing the same way each time in my interpretation. He was a master.
Was he a case of someone who got beat up by his critics in his day and is just now becoming the literary genius that he's perceived?
The general public did not accept his work as poetry. His comrades, the literary people of his day, were certainly in tune with what he was doing. Leaves of Grass was first published in 1855. Numerous editions after that, he kept reworking each of those poems or songs in Leaves of Grass until the final publication in, I believe it was the 1880s. And some of the songs that he wrote would appear different in the 1855 edition than in the latest edition, the most recent edition that he would have done. Some you would hardly recognize as the same song, but others are definitely the same. But you can see that, oh, he's juxtaposed words. He's changed words. He's done. So he kept writing those over and over. He was a perfectionist, I'm sure.
So when you're on stage, you feel a responsibility to his legacy, I'm guessing. You feel like he's a buddy of yours. You're giving us Walt Whitman as we may only ever know him. So.
There are moments when I'm interpreting on stage when I feel Whitman is present in my voice. Yes, there are times when I feel that. And it's an intense feeling. I can't say I feel it with every word that I'm saying on stage.
No.
Someone coughs in the audience and I might get distracted, but nonetheless, he's there with me in much of the presentation.
When did you feel this coming on? When did you feel the need to be Walt Whitman's 21st century spokesperson?
Well, Whitman himself, probably about 10 years ago. Okay. I actually, when I picked up Leaves of Grass probably 25 years ago, 30 years ago, and just started sitting down and reading it. And the beauty of poetry, of course, is you can turn to any page and start a new poem and read that poem, and it can be done in its entirety, and you don't have to read the whole book. When I found a poem then, I would dog-ear the page, or I'd stick a little marker in and come back to it later. Actually, putting it on stage probably about 10 years ago when I started to get this idea in my head, as I came closer to retirement from my real job in life.
Which was?
Oh, I was the manager of a recycling solid waste program in Pepin County.
Okay.
I wanted to do something, and I wanted to do something Whitman.
Cool.
There are a lot of Whitman impersonators. I don't try to do that.
Oh,
I only try to bring him to life through my voice, facial expressions, a few gestures here and there, but I'm certainly not trying to be Walt Whitman on stage.
Is there a short piece you can grace us with that can give us a taste of Whitman?
Probably when I read this piece, I felt as close to Whitman as I ever wanted to. He is expressing to us some of his humanist theory, but also reincarnation. He is here with us. This is called Full of Life. Full of life now, compact, visible. I, 40 years old, the 83rd year of the state. to one a century hence, or any number of centuries hence, to you, yet unborn, these seeking you. When you read these, I that was visible am become invisible. Now it is you, compact, visible, realizing my poems, seeking me, fancying how happy you were if I could be with you and become your comrade. Be it as if I were with you. Be not too certain, but I am now with you.
Wow.
All of the words in the presentation belong to Whitman. None belong to me.
Terry Mesh, thanks for being with us. This is fun.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Sing Me the Universal, a Whitman monologue at the Old Courthouse Museum in Durand, 7:30 p.m. next Saturday, August 16th, a fundraiser for the Pepin Historical Society.
Here's what's on stage in area theater venues. The Northern Star Theater, Rice Lake, will present The Sound of Music through Sunday. There is no Saturday performance. The show runs through August 17th. The St. Croix Festival Theater's Conservatory for Young Performers will perform Aristophanes' 405 BC comedy classic The Frogs tonight, Thursday. The Festival Theater's production of The 39 Steps play Saturday and Sunday. Almost Maine will be staged this afternoon and evening, Thursday, at the festival. The Sunshine Boys, a production of the Red Barn Theater in Rice Lake, will play through Saturday. That Love and Feelin', the story of the Righteous Brothers, will complete its run Friday and Saturday at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson. The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild will hold auditions for Young Frankenstein at 7 p.m. Monday and Tuesday at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. The Phipps Children's Theater will hold auditions for students entering grades 7 through 9 for The Spell of Sleeping Beauty tonight, Thursday, from 4 to 7 p.m., and Monday from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Phipps in Hudson. And that's some of what's happening in live theater around the region. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Yes, you are. Thank you, sir. Spectrum West for a Thursday, the 7th day of August. You might be listening on a Friday, the 8th of August, too. And if you are, thanks so much. A couple of reminders, Shell Lake Arts Center, Saturday, the 10th Annual Evening with the Stars Gala. It's big. That's all I can say. ShellLakeArtsCenter.org is where to go. Northern Lake Center for the Arts in Amory, Rimshots, the Twin Cities Percussion Ensemble, returns Saturday night at 7:30. That's fun. What a show next week. We're going to head north for a look at next weekend's big Herbster Studio Art Tour. The always innovative Billy McLaughlin will join us, and we'll enjoy his music together. Speaking of music, the Northwoods Rock Rally plugs in up near Glen Flora, Wisconsin. We'll help you get ready for that party and more. Thanks, Tiffany and Rich and Dean, for all your help in getting this show on the road each week. There's more involved, of course. And thanks to you guys for keeping it rolling along, gaining speed, and gaining riders at every stop. I'm Al Ross. This is Spectrum West. Thanks, and we'll see you next week.